Okay, here we are back. Now, hour three tonight, we get to go down to Las Vegas and spend some time with one of the greatest people I've ever had the privilege of knowing, and I mean that across the board. John Barber is the embodiment of true, from-the-heart humor. He's a humorist, not just a comedian. A comedian can learn lines and get up and do their shtick. John is a humorous man. He understands the irony of life and how to have fun with it and to share that fun with a lot of people for many decades. And we're always grateful to spend time with Johnny. Are you there, young man?
Yes, Jeff, and thank you so much for the verbal introduction, which is always so sweet and wonderful. But that is the worst bloody Christmas music I ever heard.
What music?
That Frankenstein music that you played.
Oh, the opening. All right, well, it's some people like it, some people hate it. Here, now you got to give me 1 minute and 20 seconds. I'm going to make good on it. I'll make that better. Here we go, because it is Christmas. Hold on. Here we go. Did that help?
Well, I must tell you, Mario Lanza singing Holy Night Divine, I must tell you, Jeff, suits me perfectly fine. See, now I said that
you
in
did?
A little couplet. And the reason for that, this is really, really bizarre. When I get upset, and I've had a lot of things to be upset about, not personally, but, you know, when I look at the world, instead of writing, I don't like to write. I write in verse, and I don't write in prose. And
right.
Why I do it so constantly, only heaven knows.
See?
Yeah. No, yeah. And you know, I don't want to talk about the wonderful things during the holiday that are happening to me because of all the dreadful things going on in the world that everyone can obviously see. See, I can't shut up.
It's okay. It comes right out from your heart. It just does.
Well, I must tell you, the first thing I posted today is, I have no patience for patience.
That's good, too.
Yeah, that's no way to start. But anyway,
witticisms. Little witticisms.
Yeah,
very good.
So in any event, if you don't mind, I had a lot of the things that I wanted to write about. But if you write it in verse, it's a little more palatable. You know, if you write it in prose, it's like a hard pill to swallow. But if you write it in verse, it might make people smile and swallow it a bit. So here's the first. Can I read a couple of these things to you? Because
I
have a lot of things that I want to get to that you and I will both love and television is one thing, movies are another thing I want to talk about. I have a number of friends who are having romantic problems, and I tried to help them with a little verse, and it turned out, in some cases, to be a horrible curse. Banks, there you go.
See, you did it again. So they're writing, this is like Dear Johnny, huh?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I don't know why it happens. When, before the second time that I was deported, I thought the only way, it's a wonderful story in my book, but I'll try to keep it short for you. But in any event, I thought the only way that I could become a citizen of this country, and I was somewhere around 18 or 19, I guess like that, and it's how I became America's youngest expert on Shakespeare. Did I ever tell you that story?
That's a wonderful story. No one will remember it with any specificity, so if you want to tell it again, go to it, because that's a $64,000 story.
Ah, there you are. What a great memory. Thank you. So I'll keep it very sweet. I'll just tell the people that what I thought I would do is... Joyce Brothers got on and became successful because she knew a lot about boxing, and she ended up getting her own show. And I thought, well, gosh, I need something that I could become an expert on. And the only, since I was a lover of Shakespeare from the time I was a kid, I thought I could do that. So I went to the public library and I got all the books, they're like 37 plays and all the sonnets and everything. And I got scores and scores of notebooks, and I reduced it, every one of the plays and every one of the sonnets, down to the simplest lines so that I could remember them. And I wanted to get on the $64,000, a $64,000 question.
And that was a lot of money back then. Friends,
it was a fortune. And who was the guy that got on the cover of Time magazine as the idol of America because he was
Charles Van Doren?
Yes, Charles Van Doren. And then Robert Redford later made a movie about him, but I won't get to that part. I'll just get to my part of it. So I thought, well, I could do as well as Charles Van Doren, but look at, he got on the cover of Time. Maybe I could get on the cover of a Passport if I won it. So what I would do, I spent a month and a half perfecting it, and I had about 20 catalogs full of every one of Shakespeare's plays and sonnets. And like I was just talking to you in verse, everywhere I would go in Hollywood, I would be quoting and talking Shakespeare. People thought I was nuts. Couldn't get it out of my head. So in any event, to ensure that I would get on the show, I went into one of these little machines where you take for a quarter, you get four pictures. And then I sent my picture.
Oh, a little picture booth. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you remember those. And photo I sent one to the producer of the show, whose name escapes me now. And then... but this name doesn't escape me, Charles Revson, because he was a guy that owned the company that sponsored the show and told them all about what it is that I could do. And then I just waited for a couple of days for what I thought was going to be a positive reply. Then I turned on the news one day and find out that it's all a fake, that Charles Van Doren had been given the answers to raise the ratings. Well, I just got deathly, deathly sick. And when I did go to finally see the movie, though, years later, and I sat in the back row, and a great English actor played Charles Van Doren. When he came on the screen, I couldn't help it. I hollered, "You asshole!" And got up and left the theater. But in any event...
You asked for it. Now, that had nothing to do with Art Baker did it, and the television program of the same name.
That is exactly right. So in any event, here's my first little dip into this. During this holiday season, I binge on TCM watching Christmas movies, all of which are talking about a world at peace. Yet when I go to the news and look at human history, I see nothing but endless wars and mindless slaughter. without cease. It makes me wonder if humanity's continuous cruelty to their own kind is as natural as Niagara Falls, flowing without end. Thousands of years of praying has not brought peace on earth, not until, like Jesus and Dr. King, we embrace so-called enemies like a friend.
Wow. Nice.
Well,
nice. Just came right out. Nice.
Yes, I'm so glad that you like it.
That's good.
Okay.
What amazes me, and I want to go back to this again. John is an artist of thought, an artist of word, and an artist of humor. It just flows out. It's like a Da Vinci, Van Gogh, whatever. It doesn't have to sit back and grind it out. He doesn't have to use tricks. He doesn't borrow anybody else's words, any other bound. He's a unique original. And all of these things you're hearing are, I couldn't do this. You did it, though, because it's you. You are humor.
Well, you know, and sometimes I wonder where it comes from. You know, I certainly do not want to ever talk about politics, but I get questions all the time because I have accurately predicted every presidential election since I was, even before I was a citizen and I could vote, and there was nothing to vote for.
And you never missed.
It was like Dick Gregory. He said he sat in at Wolverhoes, during a civil rights day until they could finally integrated the restaurant, and then he found there was nothing in the menu worth eating. Well, I found nothing worth voting for, but I got so many requests. I said, listen, this is just, I'm going to post one little thing. You take a look at, and that's all I'm going to say. And this is what I said. And my God, you should see the brilliant replies, but I won't get to because there's so many other things that I want to talk to you about. Predicting a presidential outcome in 2024 is, for me, as you can imagine, very, very hard to even contemplate. Because if it's either Biden or Trump who does win it, it continues our slide to a horrible fate. If it's slow Biden, there's a possibility his failing hard at inauguration may see him carried away in a casket. If it is Teflon Trump avoiding jail, we'll have what we deserve, a leader whose heart and head are as empty as a basket.
Good job. Very good. Now, that's the kind of commentary about politics that we all can use.
And I have 24 Trump supporters who absolutely love when I do something that's not so difficult on Trump because they recognize the truth of it, But this is another thing. Today, we got a notice from the power company, Nevada Power. And it said, we have 10 days to pay our bill, otherwise we're going to shut off the power. We have never failed to pay any bill on time for our entire married life. Not once.
Uh-huh.
So I said to Sarita, let me call them. And she said, no, you'll tell them to fuck off.
Sarita's right.
So she said,
and they deserve it. Not that it's going to matter
she
much.
She said, please, I'll have a lot more luck with them. She spent an hour and a half on the phone with an 800 number and could not get through to a human being. So I said, give me the phone now and let me try it. I tried it for an hour and 15 minutes. And that's 3 hours of our afternoon because the bill was like $267, which we easily have, and we could play. Ordinarily, she would mail it, and we have 10 days deliverance, they call it, to mail it. So I said, if you know, we got 10 days, I'll mail it tomorrow. See if you can try again on the phone. I said, no, we'll mail it. I got so upset. I couldn't get it off my mind. And so this just poured out of me. You have no idea how pissed I am at what I see human communication has been reduced to in my once very friendly native land. When I'm on the phone to any company desperately to report a problem or trying to pay a bill, all I get is a damn robotic voice that is canned. Then when I go to a large market or a large factory anywhere in the country, I see more and more robots replacing more humans still. Right. It makes me wonder why the owners of these factories and this land don't have robots fighting their fake wars so that it's not humans they kill.
Good. Yeah, it's very, very upsetting. I called UPS last week about something, and there was no way they're going to let you talk to a human being. You've got to really outsmart AI, and that's becoming harder to do all the time. It used to be you could just press zero and you'd get bounced over to a human being. Uh-uh, no more. They got you into a phone tree with so many branches on it, you don't know which way to go. It's crazy.
It is. And, you know, a few of my friends are having some romantic problems. And I never, ever, ever, ever give advice. I just don't ever like to give advice.
Now, if any of you out there believe that, listen. That's cute,
okay,
John. Go ahead.
Here I have. I never, ever give advice, but sometimes I can certainly give you a perfect but overlooked observation. Here is one of the most important ones that at any age is so very hard for humans to learn. Nature designed your magnificent heart for only one purpose, and one purpose only, and that is to beat, just to beat, not to think. To think, nature left to our sometimes less than magnificent minds, made less magnificent by not turning a deaf ear to the interrupting heart. That's not
beautiful
poetry.
Stuff.
It's almost nice. It's not. But I got to read you a couple of things, if you and friends don't mind about that.
No, please do.
I have so much I want to talk to you about. So I got to see. Okay, this is very simple. This is to a guy who's just acting like an idiot, and I said to him, if on some wonderful, very lucky day, you've been struck down and deep in the heart by the arrow of Cupid, you better make sure the object of your affection has also felt it, or you'll find yourself acting very stupid.
Oh, these are pearls. That's very good. You need to post these. I hope you did.
Yeah, okay. If you're knocking on what you think is your true love's door, and it doesn't open, and the response is as quiet as a mouse, you should absolutely not be knocking anymore. And if it's still for a true love you're hoping, go find yourself another house.
Good. I like these. They're very elegant in a kind of a very classy way. It's unusual. These aren't little one-liners. These are very nicely done. They're Shakespearean.
Well, when I got to be thinking more thoughtfully about what's going on in the world, I said in 2024, oh my, as time does quickly fly, we all stand by quietly and watch more justice die.
Amen.
Amen is right. And this is a holiday confession. I absolutely love writing, especially about writing all the wrongs. But I envy all those who do it even better, doing it with songs.
Nice.
In a world that more daily is falling totally apart, and one for which no one seems to have a solution, you'll soon see I'll have a really good start when you see my perfect New Year's resolution. Now, this is, you know what? It is very, 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 very hard to look at what is going on in Israel. And I don't want to comment about how I really feel, because I'm going to piss a lot of people off.
Understood.
But you know, when you look at the horror of it and how everybody is turning a blind eye to it, I felt I had to say something. But what I do, as a bit of a coward that I am, and I'll tell you a little bit more about my cowardice in just a minute, is that I attribute it to somebody like George Carlin or Bill Hicks. Because George Carlin and Bill Hicks, as you well know, two of America's greatest comic critics who used massive profanity sometimes to point out obvious truths.
Right.
And they were geniuses at it. So my being a bit of a coward, I hide either behind George or by Bill Hicks. And Bill Hicks, I think, outdoes every comic who ever lived in America. He is an absolute comic genius, the only one with the genius who was able to write something funny and interesting, truthful about the murder of John Kennedy, which I included in my film. He didn't do very well in America, but he became a rock star in England. So this is, I find it. Hang on just a second.
Bill Hicks was big in England, huh?
Oh, my God, he was a rock star. I mean, if you go Google Bill Hicks at Oxford, you will absolutely stay. He's at Oxford University. He's invited there by the deans and the students because he doesn't have a voice in America. I mean, it is beyond belief that he's so brilliant. So in any event, okay, God dang it. I'm on a phone here at the same time I'm talking to you to find these things for you. So if you hang on, because I also have something for nerds like you and me that I think that you would really, really deeply appreciate. So let me.
Good. You go find it.
Right. Anything for nerds. Oh, I want to get to the thing about nerds. Oh, so and before I get to that, you know, after 29 years, Brian Gumbel is quitting television. Did you know that?
No,
He's done a show called Real Sports. And as those of you who know have read my book, I gave Brian Gumbel his first job.
His first job.
That's yes. Right. Okay. So when he was leaving to go to the Today Show, he was on the show that I was on with Burt Reynolds. Burt Reynolds invited himself on the show after I bombed one of his movies. And it was his best interview he said he ever gave. So while Brian was going to go to the Day Show, I let him do a piece that's 5 or 6 minutes long. And it's called Brian Gumbel, Black Hairdos Matter. So if you go to my website, johnbarbersworld.com, and it's on YouTube, it is absolutely hilarious. Because it shows you and me talking as my co-host and host, and he's showing pictures of himself as a child to an adult with the various hairdos he has. Jeff, it is so wonderful. That's why sometimes I wish you would be on the air, because there's so many things that you and I could share with an audience. But
That'd be fun.
Yeah. Have your audience go there. So I'm going to try to find this thing for you.
You've referred to this before. I've not seen it.
Oh,
His hair was quite a journey to watch. I used to watch it.
Okay, you go to it and you put it on your Facebook. And I think you have a column of mine or something like that.
I have you are a columnist. You have a section on the homepage. Yes.
Okay, put it there. And the other thing is that I have still a lot of fans around who remember my reviews in the 70s at KNBC for 5 years and 10 years at Los Angeles Magazine. And a few are new fans, Jeff, since Carol Hanick's great, fun, informative, the greatest reviews I ever read.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
A handful nice. Of people have asked me if I knew what Woody Allen's new movie shot in Paris, and it's called Coup de Chance, which means stroke of luck, which is only playing in Paris, will never be shown around the world. And he believes that luck plays the most important part in your life, which is in many cases is true. And it's true in my case. Anyway, I had a number of people ask me what it was about. And I was I going to review it? And what's it about? And I said, yes, it's about an hour and 33 minutes.
When is this Woody Allen? Is this Woody Allen movie out now?
In Paris, yeah. Uh-huh. In Paris. Yeah. So,
what was the movie that he made? It was staged in Paris, and Hemingway was in it. And
yes,
it was
by the way, that is an excellent movie, and so was the murder mystery. He outdid Alfred Hitchcock in his film in Shot in England, which is just terrific. I can't remember the name. Back to Bill Hicks. Okay. This is what I had to say, and the last thing I'm going to say. Because it's based on this news story that really upset me. Last week, the U.S. Pentagon just announced that they are rushing to get many, many more needed weapons to Israel. If Bill Hicks or even George Carlin were alive today, they'd probably say, are they fucking kidding? That means Israel will have more weapons than Palestinians left to use them on.
Yep. Yep. So. I've run several videos about the horrors going on there. And it's being carried out by a country, whoever it is. In this particular case, it's Israel, who has absolutely no fear whatsoever about being held accountable for anything it's doing. Nothing. No one's going to do anything. What are they going to do, fine them? If they do, they'll just come over here and we'll give them more money to pay the fine. What the hell are they going to do? So anyhow, this is really dreadful what's going on there. I agree. Awful.
You know what? Here's another couplet. Though the many, many years, Jeff, and time do so quickly fly, to make my life happier and complete, to walk my talk, I'll always try. I'm very proud of that, you know. So now I'm going to give you my last little. This is what I called the greatest to the point love quatrain ever written. You know what quatrain is.
The quatrain, yes.
Just four lines, okay?
I can't wait to hear this one. All right.
To be in love, there is no reason. To fall in love, there is no season. When you have it, 'tis a stroke of luck. But when it mysteriously vanishes, oh, fuck.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's a dinger. You got it. A stinger with a dinger.
Now,
good job.
What do you want? Let me ask you a couple of things that you might. Oh, okay. You never asked me about how the screening went in.
We haven't had that chance yet. It's on the agenda here. And there was also another thing. You told a little story. It was a little tiny vignette about having gone to see a movie, and when you walked out of the theater, you dropped one of the greatest lines ever on somebody. A movie theater. You were exiting a movie theater. You remember this?
No.
Oh, yeah. Somebody asked you about the film, and you said, and you got up and walked out of the theater.
Gosh, I don't, you know, I've written.
Sarita might know, but anyway, it was really funny.
And by the way, when you go to www.johnbarbarasworld.com and you search the Brian Gumbel thing, the Brian Gumbel thing is the second part. You know what the first part is, Jeff? The first I had NBC gave me a poor man's Johnny Carson show that was on Saturday nights, and it was as successful as Carson's show. And this is the one that Burt Reynolds is on. Great set, great music. I mean, it's a better producing show than Carson's ever was. Because one of the stories in that show, aside from interviewing Bert and doing the hair about Bryant, there was a guy named John Gabron who was an assassin for the CIA during the Vietnam War. And he had a meltdown in Griffith Park. And he took his rifle up there and he was aiming it at people. So he was arrested, okay? So there was a movie made by a very, very, Bob Rafelson wrote a great, it did a great movie about the killers, our great killers, about how America, it's a documentary about how America turned young men into great killers. I mean, it's a fantastic, and Columbia was not going to release it. And the only reason I found out about it, it was reviewed by a congressman in the Congressional Record. So I called up Bob Rafelson and I said, Bob, why don't you come on the show and bring me a clip, because I might be able to save it for Columbia, who financed it, saved a film for Marty, whatever, Scorsese. Alice doesn't live here anymore. He remembered that I saved it. He said, I got a better idea, John, if you're interested. And I said, what's that? He said, why don't you interview John Gabron, the assassin? The guy proves that he murdered 33 people assigned by the CIA and the military. And I said, God, I would give anything to do that interview. But he said, I'll fix it for you. And I said, well, I can't bring him into a studio. And he said, why not? I think you think he's going to be comfortable sitting here with these lights and around these stars? No. I said, I'll take one cameraman and no guard, and I'll take him back to where he was arrested if you think he'll let me. And he said, oh, my God, he would be so comfortable doing that. So he bailed him out of jail. I went up there. And on that particular show, I showed the 12-minute interview that I did with John Gabron. Do you think Johnny Carson could do that?
No.
Absolutely not. No. And what they did, they arrested him again, and they sent him up to a psychiatric ward in San Francisco, and we never heard from him again. But in any event,
John, hold on. The way you handled your programs and yourself was, I don't want to use the term freewheeling because it wasn't quite that, but Carson was really a prisoner of an agenda, of a format that he stuck to very, very stringently in his program. It was a formula. It worked. I understand that. You were always so spontaneous with what you were doing. You could meld yourself into any different kind of guest that you would have on and bring the best out. That's what you did so well. Go ahead.
The reason for that, Jeff, is I was a fan of intellect and humor and talent.
Yes.
You know that even Harlan Ellison is one of the three great science fiction writers in the world. He's up there with Ray Bradbury and Nabokov and all of them, okay? He was the guy that was going to write the introduction to my book. And the first time he interviewed me when I substituted, hosted for Merv Griffin, when they had me under contract to replace Merv, he called me a fag. And when I got my own show, he's the first guy I booked because he was so brilliant about television. That's I am funny. A fan of talent, even if they bomb me. Yeah. I am just a fan. Okay, so now I just want to tell you one quick thing about my trip to L.A. in the film, and then why I have suddenly turned into a coward. Okay, now, I was a little disappointed when I went down there. The movie, as you know, my third was called John Barber and William Shakespeare's Last Word on the Assassination of John F. Kennedy. And it is like an 81-minute monologue but with pictures, but I must tell you, it is really very arresting. I have, and it's what's so interesting, the dozens and dozens of reviews, Jeff, that I've gotten on the internet, 90% of them are from women. I mean, just astonishing.
That is interesting.
So I went down there, and I was just, I went to two of the screenings on a Saturday. There were three screenings every day, 1 o'clock, 3:30, and then 7:30. I got up 4 a.m. and caught a plane to go down there Saturday to see all of the screenings. I only got to get through the first two because I was totally, totally exhausted. And there were 8 to 10 people at each screening, and not one was under 50. But nearly, and some of them came back a second time, which was amazing. So I was disheartened that there weren't more younger people, and no, you know, not one, and it was a beautiful theater in a very expensive neighborhood. So, but at the 3:30 screening, okay, let me tell you this, Jeff. Over the years of telling Jim Garrison's solved sabotage story of the public murder of John Kennedy, I have met some of the most interesting, extraordinary people. I have this picture of me, Jeff, with one of them. His name is Jeff Abraham. It was Saturday, Jeff, at one of the afternoon screenings of my film. As usual, when I was a critic, I always sat in the back seat just to watch everyone in front of me and listen to the audience. At the end of the movie, this one gentleman seated a few rows in front of me stood and applauded. I was so impressed and thankful, I rushed down to thank him. He grabbed me by the hand and thanked me for mentioning George Carlin in the film twice, telling me that he was George's publicist for 18 years and asked for my autograph. Of course, I was thrilled to do so, but totally stunned when he pulled out what he wanted me to autograph, saying he was every bit as much a fan of mine as he was of his own client. There were two of my comedy albums in absolute pristine condition. This alone, and Jeff's enthusiastic appreciation of all my work, made everything about that trip to L.A. more than worth it. And back home in Vegas, I am still stunned by it.
That's very unique, and I've never heard a story like that before. That's Those album covers will obviously always be around. They're special. You made that guy's life, day, month. That was really neat. How did he find them? He must have had them for all these years.
You know, the sad thing is you can't see the picture unless you go to my Facebook. And the picture, he's not just hugging me, he's squeezing me. And it's just adorable. I wanted to tell you this about why I sometimes is a real coward. Everybody is calling me a hero for what I do for Jim Garrison and what I'm now, Leno Sanek and I are now doing for William Pepper, which I'll get to in a minute. But in any event, about 2 months ago, I said that I had met three geniuses in my life. And they were Jim Garrison, Buckminster Fuller, the scientist, and of course, my son. And they're all men. And I had some ladies send me a note saying, hey, hang on. You said they're all men. What about some smart women? So I said, oh, I'm sorry. So then I put up on my post that I was going to announce the three smartest genius women that I had ever met. And this is the result of that. What a coward I am. I can take on the entire federal government and the CIA and the media and the do-nothing JFK assassination researchers every single day without fear of anything. And yet I cannot take on a handful of women. In a previous post, I mentioned I was going to name the three genius women that I know who are still happily alive. And then I got a half a dozen or more notes from other women who would not have been on the list, wondering if they are. So fearing the trashing I might get from those not mentioned, I must now cowardly back out and keep my mouth shut, which I should have done in the first place.
That's a funny story. So you really struck a nerve. You struck a hormonal nerve there with women.
Yeah. So, let's see. You know, you might. Are you familiar with? Oh my God! Do you want me to talk about TV a minute, or do you remember Monty Python?
Of course. I wasn't a big fan. I was working all the time, but I do remember them, and I have seen some very funny skits.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? Because let's see if I have it here. Who is it? Okay, hang on.
Here, let me do this. Can you give me about 50 seconds, 60 seconds here?
Oh, yeah,
I
want to
play this. You're going to like this. Yeah, John will like this. If he doesn't, I'll be shocked. All right. Tell me who it is. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but you'll know. Hold on.
Since I still appreciate you, let's find love while we may. Because I know I'll hate you when you are old and gray. So say you love me here and now, I'll make the most of that. Say you love and trust me, for I know you'll disgust me when you're old and getting fat. An awful debility, a lessened utility, a loss of mobility is a strong possibility. In all probability, I'll lose my virility, and you your fertility and desirability. And this liability of total sterility will lead to hostility and a sense of futility. So let's act with agility while we still have facility, for we'll soon reach senility and lose the ability. Your teeth will start to go, dear, your waist will start to spread. In 20 years or so, dear, I'll wish that you were dead. I'll never love you then at all the way I do today. So please remember, when I leave in December, I told you so in May.
A musical genius, Tom Lehrer.
You got it.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I was an enormous, enormous fan of it. I said, I just devour talent. Now, here's something. You talk about Monty Python. To me, often they were too silly. Often they were a little obtuse. But sometimes they wrote something so brilliant, it was over everybody's head. Have you ever heard of the Philosopher's Song?
No.
Well, it is the most brilliant thing they ever did. And it's over everybody's head. Now, I have a friend in Serbia who would be one of the geniuses, a lady named Alexandra, and I posted her stuff that's hilarious. So right. This is based and inspired by her. So I've written it down, and can I read it to you?
Sure.
Because if there are intellectuals out there, they will love this beyond belief. Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay. Jeff, nobody ever seems to write anything for nerds. Well, since it's a holiday season, I'm inspired to share with them this gift of wit and wisdom inspired by my friend in Serbia, Alexandra, who's writing on movies. Jeff, when she was 9, she watched every American movie and kept notes in books all of her life. Okay?
That's remarkable. Yeah.
It is. Okay. Alexandra, who's writing on movies or politics and everything, I have shared with you often that indeed shows how really smart and witty a writer she is. Below, on my Facebook, she posted a drawing of Plato and Plato's comments on how worthless even romantic poetry was, which I was talking about earlier. Yeah. Then in her down-to-earth way, her simple comment was, quote, "No wonder he couldn't get laid," unquote. So, loving the honesty of it, I had to reply with my 2 lines of poetry. "No wonder he could not get laid. That is why the ones Plato banged had to be paid," unquote.
God.
Of course. Yes. I was tickled by how cute and clever I was, but both Alexandra and I were outdone by someone, Jeff, I never heard of in his reply. His name is Dan Werben. Quote, John Barber, hilarious. Monty Python could have used that line in their philosopher's song. And then he quotes me the entire song, and here it is. Just genius. Immanuel Kant was a real pissant who was very rarely stable. Heidegger was a boozy beggar who could think you under the table. David Hume could outconsume William Frederick Hegel. And Wittgenstein was a beery swine who was just as sloshed as Schlegel. There's nothing Nietzsche couldn't teach you about raising of the wrist. Socrates himself was permanently pissed. John Stuart Mill, of his own free will, on half a pint of shandy, was particularly ill. Plato, they said, could stick it away, half a crate of whiskey every single day. Aristotle was a bugger for the bottle. Hobbes was fond of his dram. And Rene Descartes was a drunken fart. Quote, "I drink, therefore I am," unquote.
That's good.
And I said, Dan, thank you. And Monty, so very much for every single word, which will inspire every single nerd to know that he or she is way above the herd, where nearly every single one of them is indeed a turd.
Well done. Well done.
Okay.
You took a walk on the wild side and you hit it. That's good. Yeah. I remember one Monty Python skit, and I'm sure many of you listening know it. It was an enormously fat man who went into a 5-star restaurant and was vomiting all the time.
Oh, my God, I know it.
Jeez. Oh.
Okay, so how much time do we have left?
About a minute.
Oh, we don't have time for it. Oh, my gosh. Because you know what, maybe one day next week, because I have some magnificent stuff here about television. I have an even more meaningful piece about the finger of fate and the wonderful finger of fate, because I have always said that nobody could compare to Jim Garrison. And then the finger of fate tapped me on the heart one day. And yes, there is. And it's William F. Pepper. And right now, Leno Sanek and Vancouver and I are doing a 90-minute long-delayed tribute to William Pepper, who solved the murder of Martin Luther King in the book, The Plot to Kill the King. So in any event, maybe one day next week, I could just come on for 15 or 20 minutes just before New Year and spend 15 or 20 minutes with you and go over that stuff, because I'm so anxious to tell you and your audience about it.
We'll work it out next week. Indeed, we will. I'll be back.
You know, that's the first time in the 8 or 10 years I've done your show that I've ever come on in the not on a Friday.
Right. Well, we'll figure it out. Definitely.
You are the best, Jeff, and the best of holidays to you and yours.
Thank you. From you, I treasure those words, and give Sarita a hug and say hi to Christopher. And I hope you have a really nice day. And you've made a lot of people happy tonight and given them smiles, as you always do. That's a gift that is unequaled. So thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Okay. Good night, Johnny.
Good night.
Mr. John Barber, and one of the truly greatest living, I call him an entertainer if you want. He's a philosopher of humor. We'll be back Tuesday, Monday night, Christmas. We're going to have a special rerun for you from the golden days of Hollywood. Hope you enjoy that. But don't forget, you are special, every one of you. And if you're alone at Christmas, hold that thought, and we'll talk soon. Merry Christmas, everybody.